So in this retreat on friendship and community, you have the handout, and I thought to just briefly go over it, talk briefly about the topics in it, and then after that start over at the beginning and go more in depth, but just to give you a little overview right now. What you have is a meditation outline, actually. So these are the analytic meditations. Remember, before I described that there's two kinds of meditation, stabilizing and analytic. So these are the analytic kind. But at the end, when you get some feeling or experience, then you keep your mind firmly on that feeling or experience or conclusion that you reach, and that becomes stabilizing meditation. But because in these meditations we're thinking about the different topics, we're trying to generate understanding and trying to investigate. So they're called analytic or sometimes checking meditation. Okay, so you're checking how things are. Okay, so we'll start out with talking about the mind is the source of happiness and pain. So this sets the groundwork for the further discussion, because in our lives, usually, we think that outside people and objects are the source of our happiness and pain, and thus we're constantly trying to rearrange the environment around us and give our expert advice to the people around us and change everything. But here what we're doing is realizing that actually the main source of what we experience comes from inside. It comes from inside in two ways. One is due to our previous actions, our previous karma. And so, you know, our actions of body, speech, and mind that were done before left imprints on the mind that ripen in terms of the situations we encounter in our life. That's one way that our mind is causing our experience. Another way is in terms of right now when we're experiencing something, how we interpret it. Because we're always interpreting things and putting stories on them and not realizing that we're perceiving things through our interpretations. Instead, we think that things are objectively real out there, and that our interpretations are the reality of the situation. Okay, when we realize that our interpretations come from us, then we can start to change them, and then thus we change what we experience. Okay, so that's another way in which our happiness and suffering can be related back to ourselves. This gives us a lot more influence over what we experience. Okay, then the next topic, the next two topics, talk about two of the ways that we tend to interact with people. One is through the perspective of attachment. So we have meditations on the disadvantages of attachment and the attachment to people. And another way we often react or interrelate with people is through anger and adversity, hostility. And so here there's the meditations on working with anger, changing viewpoints, and our buttons. Okay, so attachment is an emotion that is based on exaggerating the good qualities of someone or something. Of course, we don't realize that that interpretation is an exaggeration. Instead, we think we're perceiving the person or the object exactly as it really is. And so then we get attached to it. We think it's inherently wonderful, and we attach. So here, attachment is definitely a skewed emotion because it's based on exaggeration. It's not seeing the other person accurately. And so then it clings. And so then we get all this you know, dependency on other people and clinging to them and feeling lonely when they aren't there and, you know, wanting to be with them and all that kind of stuff, okay? And then the opposite way, you know, on the hostility side, that also is based on exaggeration. There we are exaggerating the negative qualities of someone or something, and then wanting to either get away from them or strike at them. Okay? And so, also based on exaggeration, and then, you know, having that kind of feeling of anger or hatred or resentment or whatever. So often, in relationships with people, our mind swings back and forth between attachment and hostility. You know, once in a while we kind of get the apathy in the middle, you know. But very often, as one of my teachers, Lama Yeshe, said, we have a yo-yo mind. Okay? It's going up and down all the time. So you meet somebody and the mind, unbeknownst to us, exaggerates their good qualities. And we say, wow, this person is wonderful. I always want to be with them. I can't be separated from them. Oh, I'm so happy. You know? And then after you're with them for a while, then we all know what happens. You know? And especially if you were to be with them 24/7, then it's kind of like, get me away, I need my own space, why don't they do what I want them to do, how come they're doing things this way, how come they're bossy and they leave their dirty socks on the floor and expect me to clean them up, and, you know, on and on, and, you know, we become disgruntled. So you see, just, you know, we're like yo-yos, and we're vacillating back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Okay? So we're doing these meditations, first of all, the disadvantages of attachment, the one on attachment to people, to try and let go of that exaggerated response to people. And then similarly, the meditations on working with anger, changing viewpoints and our buttons, so that we can neutralize the feeling of hostility that we have towards others. Okay, both of the meditations under attachment and anger, they're, you know, we only have a day and a half together, so these are things to get you going, and then the main thing is to follow up on it and learn more afterwards and to keep on reflecting on these. Then we'll get into the topic of what are friends. And we'll take this especially from the Sigalovada Sutra, which is one of the sutras, a discourse that the Buddha gave. And in this discourse to a young man named Sigalo, I think his name was, the Buddha talked about healthy relationships among people. So he talked about couple relationships, he talked about friendships, he talked about employer and employee, about teacher and student, and so gave some guidelines about how people would, you know, be beneficial to relate to each other. And of course he was talking to an audience 2,600 years ago, so especially his guidelines for couples are, you know, have some of that cultural influence. But the ones about friends, I think, are fairly similar to today. We might adapt some things. So, you know, the Buddha emphasized that a bad friend, for example, is one who takes you out gambling. Well, we might also add, you know, drinking and drugging and, you know, to the pubs and to the strip clubs and to the, you know, all these places, okay? So, but it's the same kind of thing. Okay, so the Buddha first talked about false friends. So we could do some reflection about people who appear as friends, but they aren't actually. Okay, because a lot of times
Well, hopefully not a lot of times, but it's sometimes a lot of times. We have friendships with people that don't work out. And when we investigate it later, we realize that we were a bit blind in getting involved in this friendship because we mistook a person's faults for good qualities. And we let ourselves be easily duped. Not necessarily that other people had the conscious intention to use us or anything. No, they're just doing what they're wanting to do. They're not thinking necessarily, I want to use this person. But because of our attachment, when they feed certain aspects of our ego, we lose our discernment. For example, okay, if somebody wants to be my friend, all they have to do is flatter me. Yeah, say nice things about me. I don't care why you're saying them, but I will like you. Yeah. If you say not nice things about me, even though you mean me well and you're trying to point out my faults to me so I don't get in trouble due to my faults, I don't like you. Yeah. But if you say nice, ego-pleasing words to me and tell me how good I am and how wonderful I am and how talented and good-looking I am, then, you know, boy, I'm your friend. Okay? So, of course, you know, what's getting me into the problems in my relationships is my attachment to praise and reputation. You know, whether or not the other person intends to manipulate or not, it has no relevance. The point is that my mind is attached to these things, so I lose my discriminating wisdom. Similarly, there might be somebody who really wishes me quite well and sees that I'm going down the wrong path and tries to warn me. And I just go, you know, why are you criticizing me? You're getting on my case, you're bossing me around, you don't care about me, bye. And in actual fact, this person was trying to help. So again, that's my problem, isn't it? It's not what the other person's doing. Yeah? So sometimes, you know, this is what happens. We are quite gullible and pick false friends because in one way or another they boast our ego and please our attachment. Okay, so there's the description of false friends, and then there's the description of good-hearted friends. So what are qualities of people who are actual friends? Yeah? So this helps us to understand and to think about what kind of qualities do we want to look for in friends, and what kind of qualities do we want to develop in ourselves so that we can become a better friend to others. Because we usually think about we think about what am I looking for in other people, but we seldom think how can I become a better friend. We will think, how can I become what I think they think I should be? Yeah, we do think that, but we don't think, how can I be a better friend? Okay. So if we feel attracted to somebody, then we want them to like us. Then we think, oh, now what do they want in somebody? Yeah, and so I want to please them and be what I think they want. So then I try and make myself into what I think they want to be with. And so I try and remake myself. Of course, that doesn't work. Yeah. And I may convince them that I'm this wonderful, fantastic person for a while. But then when I start just relaxing that and doing what I usually do, then that other person really has some problems. Because I haven't really been honest. And often, you know, we haven't even realized how deceptive our behavior has been. Because this is just standard fare for friendships in America. Yeah? Or for getting a job in America, we're always thinking, what do they think I should be? So it really becomes quite problematic in relationships because, of course, we aren't what we try and pretend to be. Yeah. And anyway, sometimes we make mistakes and we think they think we should be somebody that actually isn't what they think we should be. Okay, then we'll move on from there to the meditation on equanimity. So equanimity is trying to develop an equal-hearted concern for everybody. So free of attachment, free of hostility, and also free of apathy. And in addition, free of discrimination between self and other. In other words, recognizing that ourself and others all want to be happy with equal intensity and all want to be free of suffering with equal intensity. Okay? And so when we develop equanimity, then we don't become attached to our friends. Okay, we'll have chosen good friends. We won't become attached to them, although we will still be very close. And that actually helps the relationships to be longer lasting. Because as soon as we attach, we become possessive, we're clinging, we're dependent, we're demanding, we're needy. We've all been through that, haven't we? Yeah. And so we know that at some point relationships crumble when that all gets too intense. So here what we're trying to develop is relationships that are free of all of that with people who are actually good, ethical, kind people whose friendship will enhance us, and then we try and in turn give to them in a way that enhances their well-being. From equanimity, we move on to loving kindness. So instead of attachment towards friends and dear ones, we want to have loving kindness. So we meditate on that. And then we also see that since everybody wants to be happy equally and to be free of suffering equally, and since there's no reason to be biased towards friends and against enemies, then we want to cultivate this loving kindness not just towards the people that we're close to, you know, who we see around us, who we rely on day to day, but to develop a very expansive feeling of loving kindness towards all beings. And that's really wonderful when we can do that. There's many benefits to ourselves and, of course, many benefits to others when we have loving kindness. When we're attached, the mind thinks, I want to be with this person because this person makes me happy. So there's 5 billion human beings on the planet, but only one of them is going to make me truly happy. So every time I'm with everybody else but that one, I'm not fully satisfied. And I'm always longing to be with that one person. Or then maybe you have a family, so there's a few kids or, you know, your parents or whoever. So then there's 5 people who make you happy until they get to be teenagers, your kids, of course. You know, then you have the other relationship with them. But we really narrow the scope of who we can be close to when, you know, we become attached. So here we're trying to really develop this equal-hearted openness and affection for all living beings. So expanding the mind, because then whoever we're with, wherever we're at, we can be happy. And when we have a happy mind like that, then of course we act in ways that contribute to the well-being of others. Okay, so we have the meditation on loving kindness. And that's where we stopped, because we only have a day and a half. So that's kind of what we're going to be dealing with. Actually, if we had more time, then I would add on the meditation on compassion. Okay, loving kindness is wanting sentient beings to have happiness and its causes. Compassion is wanting them to be free of suffering and its causes. So I would add that meditation on. And then we have another meditation called taking and giving, in which we imagine taking others' suffering and giving them our happiness. Okay, which is, we usually do the opposite, don't we? Yeah, when there's happiness, I'll take it, and when there's suffering, you can have it. This meditation, it changes that, and so there's a very profound change that occurs in our mind as well. If you want more information on some of these meditations, in case we run out of time, one of the books that Allison brought, Transforming the Heart, has quite a bit on that. That book was republished under the title Transforming Adversity into Joy and Courage. And so they might have it here in the library, in the bookstore, I'm not sure. And I think they do have Working with Anger, so if, you know, that one really leaps out at you, then that book might be very helpful. Okay? So that's kind of an overview of what we'll be doing.